And you are listening to listener-supported Montana Public Radio, KDWG Dillon, KGPR Great Falls, KUFN Hamilton, KAPC Butte, KUHM Helena, KUKL Kalispell, KUFL Libby, KPJH Polson, KTFC Thompson Falls, KUFM Missoula, KUMW Dillon, KEUK Eureka, KUMS White Sulphur Springs, KUMD Deer Lodge, and KPHB Phillipsburg. You can always listen online at mtpr.org, or you can ask your smart speaker to play Montana Public Radio. And good evening, Montana. You're listening again to Montana Public Radio. We're well into the final evening of our fall fundraiser. Tomorrow morning is the last morning. And because it's 7 o'clock on a Thursday, you are listening to me. I'm Lauren Korn, and this is the very beginning of the 7 o'clock hour, The Right Question. And I'm joined across the glass in the studio by my 7 o'clock, I don't know, Justin, what would you call you? I don't know.
Compatriot.
Compatriot, yes. Justin Engel, host of A New Angle, comes on at 7:30 every Thursday. And by Sarah Aronson, who is the former host of The Right Question and current Freeform's host, World Bridges host, grounding host. You sort of do it all.
Yeah,
yes, you really do. Yeah.
I moved over to music, but you know, I miss The Right Question too. Lauren, it's so great to be here. How fun that we get to have a conversation.
Yeah, I feel like the last time we had a conversation on the mic, Sarah, we were kind of a changing of the guard situation, right?
That's right.
We interviewed each other when I took over the reins. Yeah, which was so fun. And I'm so excited to be talking to you now. We're going to be focusing our attention this hour. We're going to share this hour from 7 to 8 on climate and the many ways in which our respective shows, whether it's The Right Question, A New Angle, or Grounding, and our lives outside of the radio station, too, and the broadcast studios, they navigate topics of climate, right? So, and the environment. So that sounds right. You guys are nodding. Yes.
Yeah, we're on board.
Yeah, we're on board. Yeah,
yeah, we're going to do this.
We're going to do this. It's going to be great. We're going to do some pitches. We're going to do some celebrating. We're going to have a great time. I'm going to actually start with you, Sarah, because we're just, I think we should just get our conversation going.
All right,
and
let's do it.
Yeah, and we can do some phone numbering and celebrating in a few minutes. But I want to ask you both, just to kind of ground our listeners in this conversation, when did the climate crisis become real for you?
Well, I'm trying to introduce this in new ways because I get tired of talking about it in the same way, but I have been learned to frame it like nature and nurture. When I was 8 years old, the Exxon Valdez oil spill hit South Central Alaska. I was in Southeast Alaska, and it was unavoidable. It was all over the news. It was all the community could talk about. And at the same time, I was raised by conservationists, people who made me go scrape labels off of beer bottles on a Saturday morning in the rain.
Wow.
And so there was this confluence of seeing what was happening really in the natural world, and then also being nurtured into having a stance that made me aware of climate. I grew up next to the Mendenhall Glacier, which has receded over a mile in my lifetime and will be out of sight before I retire. So really my surroundings, my landscape, my family, it became real at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Justin?
Gosh, well, I grew up in New Hampshire, and my father has this obsession with weather. Every day he would just talk about the weather and what was going to happen with the weather. But in spite of his fascination and obsession with weather, I don't think he ever once considered climate.
That's interesting. Why do you think that is?
Oh, gosh. That's a different radio program.
Okay,
Lauren.
Different story. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But climate wasn't that salient an issue to me. We're certainly connected with the natural world. And, you know, after growing up in New Hampshire, moved around West Coast, East Coast, back to the West Coast. 2005, Inconvenient Truth comes out. I find that really compelling, but it was still abstract, right? It was a bunch of charts and graphs, really scary information, but, it, you know, I didn't feel it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't really until moving to Montana in 2012 that I felt it, and that was through wildfire smoke. The fall of 2012 was a particularly bad smoke year here in town. There was a fire down in Lolo. Some of my colleagues were evacuated. I had small children. I had a lot of concern about, is it okay to exercise? Is it okay to go outside? What should I do with these little kids? and some actual fear. Could my house actually burn down?
Yeah.
And so I think that fear is what the first time I actually felt climate change is something real. And yeah, it's been, you know, whatever, 13 years here in Missoula and in Montana and trying to just sort of navigate it, understand more, and use whatever skills I have to help advance understanding.
As you were talking, Justin, about that fear that you were feeling and kind of this uncertainty about how to navigate this particular time, this wildfire season, I'm reminded, Sarah, of grounding episodes. You know, very much so. We not only had an episode on air pollution, which includes wildfire smoke, but we really focused heavily on caregiving and youth towards the end of the season as well. What advice would you have given Justin if you and Justin knew each other at that time and Justin expressed that concern and that unknowing, what would you, having now created this grounding podcast and having these considerations kind of rolling around in your own brain, what would you have told Justin at that time?
Well, I think rather than advice, I would just sit with you and say, I feel it too. Right? We know that our brains need clean air and cool temperatures. So I guess in the logistics realm, I would ask, like, do you have clean access to clean air? Do you have access to cooler temperatures? But mostly I would, part of what heals, what is supportive for people with climate distress is just the me too of it. It's like, stressful to me too. Bringing people out of isolation and fear and shame is the collective, is the supportive community. So that would be my first line of defense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that you do off the mic, away from
my day
public
job.
Radio. That is your day job. You sit with people in their feelings, whether they are climate related or not.
Yeah, it's a lot of me too.
Mm-hmm. It is a lot of me too. Yeah.
Lauren.
Yes, Sarah.
Can we ask you this question? What's your origin story with climate?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I grew up the daughter of a wildlife manager. And so I will say, not only the daughter of a wildlife manager, but the daughter of a deeply sympathetic and clinical psychologist and nature lover. So the kind of combination or the intersection between nature and society, wilderness and civilization, however you want to kind of phrase this idea of the human and the non-human, that was kind of instilled in me, this kind of ethic, from the very, very beginning. And it's an ethic that has sort of, it's certainly stayed with me in my 30 some odd years of life. But what I think, if I was to say, confronted by this climate crisis, I would say that because I've lived in Montana most of my life, I've spent some time on the East Coast, but most of my life has been spent in this state. My body is actually what's been telling me that something is going wrong. I grew up here, and so my body became very accustomed to a certain relationship to the land. And when that land shifts, when it changes, and as it has changed, the feeling in my body has changed too. And I don't know that I can be any more specific than that.
You're an animal still.
I am still an animal. Yeah. There's a word that I like to evoke, which is solastalgia, which is this combination of solace and nostalgia. And it's this feeling of loss. It's a feeling of grief, of a loss of home place. Yeah. And again, I can't really place the feeling anywhere else except the body, that feeling. I feel a loss of home. My home is not the same. Yeah.
That's such a profound sentiment. I just want to remind listeners that you're tuned into MTPR. During our fall fundraiser, we have an incredible bonus challenge on the books. If we get 40 more pledges by the end of this hour, 8 o'clock, we'll get a $5,000 bonus.
Wow.
We really need your calls right now. We have friendly phone volunteers standing by. The number is 406-243-6400. Online at mtpr.org. They're standing by. They're not just sitting even.
Yeah, and we actually literally have volunteers standing by. And Sarah, I know, you know, the topic of our conversation tonight is oscillating, I think, between a deep love for the environment and this place that we're on and grief. You know, I was just talking about this grief and loss. But there is a lot to celebrate. And because I think we should celebrate.
You're going where I think you're going.
I'm going where you think I'm going. We're in the middle of this challenge, and we have a lot to celebrate. So let's do some celebrating. Sarah, what are we celebrating?
Hey, let's celebrate 187,000. But we're not done yet. How about 188? 189. And finally, 190. And on top of that, we have folks to thank. When you call and make your pledge, you can have us read your name and your message on air. So thanks to Paul Lumpkin of Whitefish. Thanks to Diane Boker of Kalispell. Thanks to Tom Garrett. And thank you to an anonymous donor from Kalispell who says, we rely on MTPR all day long. Thank you for your hard work and dedication.
Thanks to Julie and Patrick Doherty from Columbia Falls. Thanks to Montana James from Missoula, Montana. Great name. Thanks to Bruce and Kathy Day from Helena. They say they've been listening to and loving MTPR for 40 years.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah,
and almost as long as the station's been around.
I was just
19 years short.
Yeah, we're headed into our 60th, but 40 years, that's not bad. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, let's see if a donor can top that. Call in, pledge now, mtpr.org, 406-243-6400. And if you can beat 40 years, we'll do another celebration.
That's right.
I love it.
That's right. Again, 40 more pledges to help us get this $5,000 bonus. If you need an incentive for $300 flat or $25 a month, you can get this Whisper Soft Heather Navy zip-up hoodie sweatshirt with the artwork of Claire Emery on the back. Or for $7.50 a month, you can get the wheat straw made, eco-friendly bento box with a bamboo lid and attachable utensils.
Wow.
Love
it. I know. Am I selling you? You're a business guy, so I'm trying to, like, is this working?
I know. It's brilliant. I mean, you maybe missed your calling.
I could have done... Yeah, what is QVC or something?
Ooh, I like it. Well, your voice is all over Montana Public Radio, Sarah, so I feel like we, at the very least, are taking advantage of what I've called your voice for a long time, which is so velvety. Your voice is velvety.
The dulcet tones of Sarah Aronson.
The dulcet tones of Sarah Aronson.
I'll read you the phone numbers, and maybe you will call. 406-243-6400. Go online, mtpr.org. It's easy to do. You can see the thank you gifts there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sarah, we're in the 7 o'clock hour, so our listeners who maybe always listen at 7 o'clock on Thursdays know about the right question. They know about a new angle. I want to clue them into your show, this grounding show that I was a producer on, that you were the host of, because maybe it's something they have yet to listen to and know fully about. So will you talk a little bit about why you came to this idea of grounding, the full name, Conversations on Mental Health and Mother Earth? Where did that idea come from for you?
I'm happy to talk about it. And I was listening to an interview, Lauren, you did with Justin Engel and Nick Mott.
Oh, yeah.
And I noticed a theme arrive in that podcast that is relatable.
Great.
Is the Maui wildfires, Lahaina, right? That was the moment for me when I thought, this is unprecedented. We don't have a collective container to think and talk about this. Mm. And that's what motivated me to start the conversation at this station about creating a climate psychology podcast to support listeners with a free public service to carry them through these kinds of collective traumas. And then, Lauren, I was thinking, do you remember the night you got involved in the project?
Should I?
It was the Christmas party.
Oh, yeah. And we were in a cellar somewhere celebrating Christmas. And I don't know. I think I probably just sidled up to you and said, this is of deep importance to me, too. Can I help?
Yeah. And I said, yeah, what do you want to do? And you were like, I'm really good at editing. And I was like, awesome. Oh. But I wanted to ask you, like, what's the magic that you bring to the project?
I like that you gave me part of my answer, editing. I feel like I have a holistic view a little bit. I'm able to see what we need to do, where we need to go, and I can sort of have a bird's eye view of it. I'm also, like, to a fault, a perfectionist. And so I'm a heavy editor, if that makes sense. I really like to get into audio. It's something that I've so enjoyed since working here at Montana Public Radio. I love to get into the audio. I also do a lot of web stuff for Grounding. I get to do a little graphic design. I get to make sure that people are paying attention in that way, because you can listen to Grounding on our website, mtpr.org/grounding, or on the podcast feed. So I feel like I'm able to take care of some of the details. You are the psychologist. We've got Jake, who is really a master engineer and editor,
Ninja.
Jake Birch.
Yeah.
And then I can make sure that other details are taken care of. I can kind of take care while you guys are in the thick of it.
So can we press on this origin story a little bit? I mean, Sarah, yeah. you sort of painted the picture of how an idea started to gestate. There was a need and potential for collaboration. But, you know, folks on the other end, they just get the privilege of listening to this beautifully produced, wonderful piece of storytelling. Take us behind the scenes a little bit more. Like, how do you go from idea to actually making something that gets on the air or gets distributed as such a wonderful piece of content from this station?
It's a process. Yeah.
We are lucky to be a part of a station in which, again, 50% of our programs are in-house. And so I pitched the idea. Michael Marsalek approached me and said, I've been thinking about climate a lot, too. Mm-hmm. How can we make this happen? Again, to be a part of such a supportive and tight-knit little production unit. And then I know Jake Birch cares about it. And then, Lauren, you know, it's like the pieces came together. Justin, I'm going to flip this question on you.
Sure.
And so the momentum started building. And then it's just a series of collaborative meetings, and you know, some of it is just the generative stuff, and then revising it and getting beautiful guidance from Nick Mott. You know, mm-hmm. he was so helpful. And then we just started doing interviews,
right?
Talking to people, right? It's like what matters out there,
right? You have so many connections in the Climate Alliance and in the psychology world. You brought those experts and those voices, and then we live in a really, really a wonderful state where there is robust action and movement happening. Yeah. And so what Grounding, I feel, does really, really well, it combines expert advice, expert knowledge with storytelling, activism, art, all of these kind of on-the-ground movement pieces that we were able to really joyfully puzzle piece together. And that really was the work. Sarah was in conversation with these experts all across the country for hour, two at a time. And then we brought people into the studio to talk about really just their real life experiences with climate and how they're living through this time. And then again, puzzle piecing that together. And it really was a joy, and it was something that we're excited to keep doing.
Yeah, and the vision, Lauren, I remember you and I talked about the name. It was like, can we call it holding? Can we call it some version of like,
To be held.
Yes. And so then we came around with Grounding, and again, bringing in this sort of nurturing maternal Mother Earth with the mental health piece seemed really important to us. Justin, I happen to know that you like collaboration. You like working with others.
Yeah.
at least some of the time. I want to know is like what do you like about working in that kind of space, and who have been some of your favorite collaborators?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think it stems from my experience in athletics. I just have always enjoyed being a part of teams, and some of the deepest bonds and most meaningful experiences in my life have come from working in teams toward a shared objective. And that can be in sports, that can be in a work context, that can be in family or anything, really. And so when it comes to collaboration professionally, I just know that, you know, my ideas come out messy and not all that well formed, and it's taken me a long time to sort of just accept that. But one way that I find it a lot easier to accept is to allow those ideas to come out with people I trust and people who I respect, and those ideas generally lead to better outcomes that way. So that's a sort of a broad answer, but more specifically in terms of working with folks here at Montana Public Radio, you know, mostly I started my podcast, A New Angle, as a side project in my office, and, you know, borrowed a mic from a colleague and just started doing it hoping that, you know, some folks would hear it and maybe give me some coaching, give me some advice. And I just start asking questions, asked the folks over here a lot of questions, got in touch with Michael early on, developed a relationship with kind of my predecessor in this hour, the late Brian Kahn, who was such an important institution in this state and an inspiration to me and many others. So yeah, just that spirit of learning and trying to share in the experience. And I'm also out of my lane. Like, I'm an academic. I'm not a journalist. I have no formal training in interviewing. So being around people with formal training in these expertise areas has been really helpful for me and pushed me to get better at what I try to do.
And I feel like one thing that we all share in each of the shows that we host is we sort of allow others. We allow the experts. We allow authors or people doing cool things in around Montana. We allow experts in psychology. We allow them center stage, so to speak. We really are giving them the platform to share their knowledge, their own communities. And at least that's certainly an ethic that I take with me into The Right Question, right? Like, I'm here to platform other people and their ideas, and I just get to have fun doing it.
You are tuned to MTPR during our fall fundraiser. We have 36 pledges to go, Lauren. We need to get this $5,000
bonus. I like that we're singing now. Okay.
You know, yep. I am the daughter of a kindergarten teacher. It's my default.
It can work.
406-243-6400, mtpr.org. Can we do a few little thank yous?
Love it.
Okay. Let's do it. I got a couple here.
Do it.
We've got Amy Velk from Butte, Montana. She says she's very appreciative of all the great work. And that's all in my stack. So, Sarah, I'll kick it to you.
Hey, thanks to Sheena Jarvie of Great Falls, who says thanks for everything. And thanks to Marianne Spitzform.
And thanks to Cindy Sturgar from Butte, Montana. And
we're getting there.
Who's next? Suzanne Guthrie from Kalispell. She says, I'm so grateful for everything you do, podcasts, all the programming, and especially the news, which is so important right now.
It's so important, yes. Justin, you were talking about collaboration and being on teams. That is what public radio is all about. We do not operate individually in this space, in any space, and we are operating collaboratively with you, our listeners. You are telling us what you think of our programs. Sarah, you mentioned kind of the semi-annual report card. We could not do what we do without you. We wouldn't have the resources to do it. And as I was saying, you know, you are part of the communities that we're reaching out to, that we want to know more from, and whose expertise, knowledge, and and time is so much a part of what we do. 406-243-6400 is the phone number to call. mtpr.org is the website.
Again, 36 pledges. Justin, how about this for a business model? We start the year and we need to make $2.3 million, and we just assume that our listeners will show up and help us pay that bill. Would you invest in this project?
I would and do invest as a donor. It is a tenuous business model, and it relies on the good faith of members. It's not quite the freemium model, but this content exists whether you pay for it or not. However, it is a bit of a collective action problem, much like climate. Like, it requires a certain amount of action from a certain number of people to make this thing go. So be a part of making this thing go. Contribute. Even if it's just a little bit, 406-243-6400, mtpr.org.
And how many more donors do we need to meet
36.
This challenge?
36.
36 of you. That is completely possible. We're about halfway through our 7 o'clock hour. And Sarah's doing something that I can't.
Ding dong. We have a reason to make noise.
We have a reason to celebrate. Okay, let's
noise.
Do it. What are we celebrating?
We're celebrating 191. Again, we're trying to get to $325,000 by tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
We need every little bit to help us along our way. Again, what can you give right now? $5 a month? $50? $25 a month will get you that fine sweatshirt. If you go to mtpr.org, you can look at it. It's the beautiful woodblock art of Claire Emery. 406-243-6400. online at mtpr.org.
And you said 36 there, so we need 36 more to get to this bonus.
Yeah.
Of $5,000.
$5,000.
Yeah. So be a part of that. Be a part of getting us over the finish line to this $5,000 bonus.
And it's not every day that your money is matched in this way, and so do take advantage of this challenge. And you know, if you're enjoying this conversation, we know that you are. You're listening. You're in front of your radios. You're listening to your smartphones. 406-243-6400 is the phone number to call. mtpr.org is our website. Sarah, you keep reminding us that Justin is in business.
Yeah.
That's his kind of realm. You're a professor of business specifically here at the university. Or maybe clarify.
My home discipline is marketing.
Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I'm a professor of marketing at the College of Business here at the University of Montana.
How does business play into your understanding of or your education of or advocacy for climate? What role or how does it maybe color the way you think about these topics?
Gosh, I've always sort of been the type of person that tries to operate from within institutions or within establishment.
Mm-hmm.
I deeply respect the world of activism, and you know that we need people to crawl up trees and refuse to get out and to do those sort of rowdy forms of activism. That's never really been me. I've always tried to work on change from within. And so I do remain bullish that, you know, a lot of what got us into this problem is business and capitalism, but a lot of what can get us out are those same things. I don't think there's anything wrong with business that business solutions can't fix. So I try to view it through that lens, and I think we need to introduce more metrics other than just the dollar into how we evaluate, how we create value for shareholders. And
say more about that. What kind of metrics would you consider?
Of it is just figuring out ways to internalize what have often been called negative externalities, things like pollution. And we're seeing you know, through regulation and other demands from consumers and other forces are trying to hold businesses more accountable and evaluate the totality of their impacts. And, you know, it's a long road, but I do think like that's business can be a force for good. It can be a force for innovation. And we need that sort of innovation to help move the problem. We certainly need robust institutions. We need a lot of things. But I think given that we haven't figured out a better way to distribute scarce resources across a broad society than capitalism, this is the system we have. We've got to make it work better for us.
And a new angle, you're talking to cool people doing cool things in and around Montana. Who have you talked to over the course of your tenure as host and producer on the show that speak to these ideas of climate?
Gosh, we've talked to a lot of people. We've talked to climate scientists. We've talked to kids, activists. We've talked to science communicators. A fellow that comes to mind is Rob Davies. He's a professor of physics at Utah State, but he's also kind of taken on this role of climate communicator. You know, he's trained as a physicist, but he's kind of come to the realization that the information model of persuasion is not really working, that the more information we simply tell people about what's happening in the climate, that's not necessarily leading to action. That's inadequate as a vehicle for change. So he's taken to partnering with artists and musicians and all sorts of other creators to sort of integrate his knowledge of climate science with novel ways of communicating it, creative ways of communicating. So that was a wonderful conversation. He came to Missoula a few weeks ago. I'm sorry, a couple of years ago. More recently, I spoke to some students at Park High School in Livingston.
Amazing.
An amazing group of young people who have just taken the bull by the horns. They have a group called the Green Initiative. It started with an effort to get solar installation on top of the high school. And it's grown into this advocacy work that involves a good number of the students out there and the classes, and they're just doing amazing things. And what was inspiring about those particular folks is just their positivity.
Hmm.
I mean, young folks have been kind of handed a world that's in a tough place, and they didn't have anything to do with how we got here, yet they're hopeful. and optimistic.
Yeah.
And don't feel trapped by it. They feel empowered by the opportunity and excited to rise to the challenge.
Sarah, I know that you can speak to that just given our, again, the last two episodes of Grounding were on youth and caregivers. Do you want to speak to what you learned from, you know, producing those two episodes, talking about youth being handed a world that is not in great shape, and the responsibility of adults in this space, and how youth are actually like very inspiring in this space as well.
Yeah, I think of Winona Bateman, who reminded me that the phrase, it's up to the youth, is not effective. It's actually our responsibility, and we need to do the adult job of protecting youth from the overwhelm and the inheritance of this. So, and it's actually like Winona will talk that it actually moves people's behavior percentage points to feel like they are responsible and then can do something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that sort of impotence of saying, oh no, we'll leave it to the next generation, actually, it's not helpful for ourselves or for young folks. Obviously, for those who've listened to the episode 3, Cecilia Spencer.
What an inspiring person. Yeah.
What I so admired about her is her access to her full humanity.
Mm.
And it didn't, you know, like speaking with her wasn't just only about hope, but about this sense of real engagement. Like the world is suffering, you know, Mother Earth is suffering, and it's our job to check in and say, hey, how are you? You know, what do you need? What can I do? And that, just it's amazing to listen to and look at youth because they know so much if we just listen to them. And again, it's our job as adults to show our youth the things we are doing. That's what helps them feel less alone and isolated and less angry, is we tell them things like, yeah, I'm eating less red meat.
Mm-hmm.
Or yeah, I am. We're not going to take an air travel trip this year. We're going to, you know, rent an EV and do something else. So we're going to stay close to home. So, you know, those are at least 3 points I can think of.
And thinking of Cecilia, I mean, she just had such a sense of self, so much confidence in what she believed and who she was. And I think in addition to these points that you just made, Sarah, what we can do as adults is to continue to uphold and really champion like that sense of self for our young people.
Yeah, get out of the way. I mean, I think of, you know, Greta Thunberg, who's like, you have responsibility that comes with your privilege, right?
Yeah,
if you have the privilege to be on the mic or to have a certain amount of wealth, actually, it's commensurate with your then responsibility to make change. And I know, Justin, you, I've heard you say that you need to think of yourself as being part of the solution. So I'm curious how you see that again in your role, especially as a radio host and having produced the award-winning Fireline podcast and, again, written this book, This is Wildfire. I can't tell if you made these things because you needed them back in 2012 when the fire was happening, or what does the solution and being part of it mean to you?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of dimensions to that. You know, it goes back to my first answer about why I like teams and collaborations. I think it's why I'm drawn to teaching. Ultimately, I like being a catalyst for others to make change and to have the sorts of life that they want to have. And a part of that that I've realized is important is translating complex ideas into useful insights. And
you're very good at it. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I feel like I stumbled into it. I'm a generalist who lives in a world of specialists. Like as academics, we're trained to be specialists. We're trained to learn more and more about less and less. And I've sort of gone down that path. And then along it, I realized I'm interested in more than just this one thing I'm really trained to understand. And so a new angle was born out of that spirit. And that led me down to the path of trying to understand wildfire. Wildfire in particular, understand wildfire, but also communicate that understanding to others and give them on-ramps to being a part of solutions. The thing I think that is attractive to me about wildfire is it's a daunting problem within climate, but one where we can actually make a difference. There are things we can do to change the status quo with wildfire. We can change our homes. Yeah. We can clean our gutters. We can landscape with gravel. We can build with more fire-resistant materials. There's things at the individual level. And a fire is nonpartisan.
Yeah.
It doesn't really care who you voted for.
True.
And cleaning your gutters and protecting your home and doing these individual things can not only protect you and your family, but it can also sort of start to rebuild some community spirit. So I feel like wildfires is this space where there maybe it gives me a lot of hope that one, we can solve the problem, but two, it can be a vehicle for maybe bringing people together and finding common ground in a world where that's just getting harder and harder to find right now.
Speaking of bringing people together, we are in the midst of our fall fundraiser here at Montana Public mm-hmm. Radio. We're also in the midst of a challenge. We are trying to get, Sarah, how many more donors?
33.
33 donors to donate any amount, right?
Any amount.
And a very generous donor here in Missoula has decided to meet us there with $5,000 if we meet this challenge.
That's right.
So now is the time. I know this conversation is fascinating and emotional, and maybe it's hard to drag yourself away, but now is the time. We are doing this for public radio. 406-243-6400 is the phone number to call. We have volunteers waiting to take your pledge, to talk with you about why you love public radio and why.
And to help you get a thank you gift.
Oh, tell us about these thank you gifts, Sarah.
I'd love to.
You're really good
this
at it.
This is what I'm best at. For $90 or $7.50 per month, you can get the wheat straw made eco-friendly bento box with the MTPR Kids logo, cute little rabbit on the front. It has an elastic band that will hold your utensils and it has a bamboo lid. You won't want to miss this.
Kids of all ages, folks.
That's right. Kids of all ages. Or for $25 a month, you can get our hoodie, which we haven't had in 5 years. So good now. It's with the artwork of Claire Emery, that beautiful firelight woodblock scene. $300 flat will get you that. It's navy, like a heathered navy.
It's particularly soft, too.
Thank you.
It's dreamy.
Sarah, yeah. I like that you say thank you. You are behind this.
I am behind the magic of the softness.
It's like an MTPR Snuggie.
It is.
Ooh, do you remember Snuggies? Wow, that was a trend. Well, you know, this is a trend, too. People love to see other listeners out in the wild.
Yes.
You know, you see
across the world.
Yeah, you see the MTPR logo, you see the back with, you know, a specific year's artwork, and you know that person has certain ethics, has certain loves, has certain ideas about the world, and one of those is this community building, Justin, that you were just talking about. 406-243-6400 again is the number to call. mtpr.org is the website. Sarah, you are holding up many, many thank yous in your hand. I'd love to
hear
them.
I'm desperate to say some names on air.
Let's do it.
Thanks to Kyle Dumas, who says, this is for Lloyd, the dog who spends his mornings watching squirrels while listening to morning classics. Thanks to Kathleen Kennedy, who says, so grateful for local coverage, incredible programming, and legitimately balanced news. And thanks to Barbara Ridgeway of Clancy, who says, really enjoying starting the day with Austin Amistoy. Okay, part of the Austin Club, fan club. Mm-hmm. Also appreciate the comprehensive news coverage throughout the day.
And thank you to Mary Toland.
That's my mom.
Hi, Mary.
That's my mom.
Hi,
from
Mom.
From Sandpoint.
Did I get the last name right?
You got it.
Oh, fantastic. All
thanks,
right.
Mary.
And she does say, like, she's responding to whatever challenge is happening.
That's right. That's right. She's doing her duty. That does. That does.
Nice. And then Becca Wheeler from Columbia Falls.
That's my friend.
Thanks for talking. Sarah, you know everybody.
Near and far.
She says, thank you for talking about climate change. I appreciate all that you do. So this one came in at the right time.
Absolutely. You know, we are not the only shows on the air at Montana Public Radio that talk climate. A lot of people believe, and I am one of them, that this climate crisis is one of the most, if not the most important issue of our time, our current time. And so Montana Public Radio really leans into that. We not only have the three shows that we're talking about tonight, but we have Climate One on Sundays. We also have a full hour of climate programming every Saturday afternoon. Montana Public Radio takes it seriously. We want to be a part of those conversations, and we want to make sure that our listeners are knowledgeable and that they have that information for themselves too. 406-243-6400 is the phone number to call, mtpr.org. caregiving.org is the website.
Can we talk about caregiving?
I would love to.
Yes, please.
Okay, I have questions for each of you.
Oh.
Can I pretend to be back on the 7 o'clock hour for a second?
Do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Episode 4 of Grounding was on caregiving and caregivers. Justin, you're a father. How do you experience climate issues in your role? Or if you have permission to share, what do you hear from your kids and how do you respond?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this fall in particular, actually last winter was a milder winter than I think we're accustomed to. And the amount of snow in town was pretty light. And then this fall has had some brilliantly warm weather. It's been very enjoyable in some dimensions. But for my daughter, my older daughter, she's expressed quite a bit of unease. Mm. It's not supposed to be this warm. Or, I don't feel right. There's not snow on the ground. So just some pretty simple, clear observations, but they express a sense of unease. And maybe it's akin to the feeling in your body that you were talking about before, Lauren, but this feeling of unease and being, she feels unattached to some sense of what should be happening.
The rhythm. Mm-hmm.
I find that really interesting given her age, right?
Yeah.
You know, I have probably, I don't know, 20 some years on this person. And she's still feeling that this something is not right, that there was a deep past that is no longer. I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's hard to know exactly. And I just sort of, I don't press too hard. I don't ask like super probing questions. I just try to keep her talking about it to the extent that she's willing to share. And I think it's pretty visceral.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just try to be with her in it and try to help her understand that, like, hey, climate is not a fixed thing. It's changing all the time, and it's changing in some concerning ways now. And you know, there are things we can do to help, some things we can't do. But, yeah, just try to help her kind of feel okay, and also, you know, to the extent that it's appropriate, some sense of empowerment at the same time.
Justin, you were saying earlier, certainly around wildfire, you hosted and produced this podcast, Fireline. You mm-hmm. created this book, This Is Wildfire, which both of which really do focus pretty heavily on action. Right? This is what you can do. How are you able to bring that kind of will do, can do, please do attitude into your relationship with your daughters? Is that something that you're able to model kind of mindful practices in the face of the climate crisis? Or how does that look?
Yeah, I'm chuckling because, you know, one person's climate action is another person's chores.
Oh, sure.
So, yes, you know, okay. The cleaning of our gutters to make our house more fire-wise, you know, maybe that's sort of collective action to solve the wildfire crisis, or maybe it's some chore that Dad wants me to do. My older daughter in particular, both daughters are at that stage of their lives, their early teens, where they are motivated by money and making some money. So, you know, I'm not immune to using an allowance as a motivating tool, but also like within those normal actions that, you know, a typical family engages in, trying to attach some meaning to it. Like, this is why we're doing this chore. I think that goes a long way. It seems to, at the very least, reduce the reactance,
sure.
right? And helps them. Yeah, I like to think it makes them feel part of something small and something big. Something small being our family and our household, but also something big meaning like, hey, you know, I try to help them understand that wildfire safety is a collective action problem, much like other aspects. We've talked about collective action before. Like, we can make our own home resistant to wildfire. That doesn't do you much good if your neighbor's house goes up in flames. So trying to help our neighbors. We've got some neighbors, some older neighbors, so trying to just sort of build some community spirit. I think they're starting to, it's so important right now with young people too. I mean, there's so many ways that young people can be disconnected from person-to-person contact. And so I'm trying to encourage them to build community in the ways that they can.
Strong communities, good neighbors. Lauren, you and I have spoke at length about caregiving.
Mm-hmm.
We share an attribute about being women who don't have biological children.
True.
And I was wondering, how do you see other ways to mother or your role as a caregiver, and especially what it's like to be a sister, an aunt, a daughter, a friend during climate distress?
I mean, I think you just answered it in part. I take great pride and time in being an aunt, a sister, a friend. And I put a lot of emphasis on those relationships. I think that's actually a really difficult question. I think, I asked Justin, how do you model certain behavior? And I don't know that I model certain behavior, but I definitely model certain ethics, you know, like, my family, my friends, they know, how important these issues are to me, and whether that those issues are coming out through, you know, interviews with authors or other parts of my life. I think that's where it is. That's how they know. I don't know. What was the other part of your question? I feel like I sort of
What's it like to be a daughter and a friend and an aunt? You know, I'm mm-hmm. thinking about your nieces.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
How do you think about their future? You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think at this point they're both so small that the most I can do is really nurture their curiosity for the natural world, right? You know,
the hogs at Moon Randolph.
The hogs at Moon Randolph, the millions and millions of rocks that can be found in parks, on walks, mm-hmm. on hikes, the sticks, you know, just nurturing that curiosity and being patient with it. And answering questions and, you know, bringing up conversations that, you know, at the age of 2, my niece is not going to understand the gravity of, but making it accessible, you know, making being outside really fun. Just making those things important to her as they are to me. Yeah.
Modeling those ethics. Yeah.
What about you, Sarah? I'm going to throw that back at you. You might not have two tiny little very adorable nieces, but how do you model that, or how do you impart those importances to people in your life?
Well, I was marinated in it growing up.
Exactly, right.
So okay. I feel like it's just embedded in me. Mm-hmm. You know, I've grown around it. It's like an inclusion. I've grown around this. And so anybody who knows me knows that I love Alaska, knows that I love this glacier, that my creative life is in relation with this body of ice all the time. And so I guess I model it by making my life touch all parts of it, you know, that my work, my creative, my relationship spheres, and my daily choices reflect some part of my values and ethics.
Mm-hmm. You, Sarah, are a climate-aware therapist. What does that mean? Tell me, like, that seems like a really good buzzword in a bio, but what does that actually mean on the ground in your practice?
On the ground, it means I've agreed to the tenets of the Climate Psychology Alliance, which is an organization formed in the UK, which now has a North American chapter, but that I'm trained and prepared to deal with issues of climate, including the things that are really yucky to deal with, like shame, you know, avoidance, guilt. Mm. So I am not going to pretend like the consulting room is a blank slate and that we don't have influence from either the natural world or the political world. It just means I'm ready. I'm ready to go there with you and acknowledge that it's real, and I'm not going to pathologize you for having feelings or symptoms about it.
And Sarah, part of your, I will say job, but I think it's also part of your personal life too, as you are public facing, not only in your sessions with clients, but you have become a public speaker. Justin, you have too. You have become, you know, maybe begrudgingly, but you have become somewhat of an expert in certain fields. How does that I don't even know if I have a specific question, but will you talk about that public facing aspect of this, how you bring your interests and your passion for this topic into the public sphere, and maybe give our listeners an example of what that looks like?
I bring it into my teaching. You know, 2 times a week I get to go into a classroom with 220 freshmen, right? And they are embarked on this wonderful thing that is college, and I frame it as an investment in themselves.
Hmm.
And I try to drill into them that be curious, take advantage of this, and be the author of your own learning. And I do try to, we talked about this a little earlier, like paint the picture of business as a force for good. I mean, these students are here to study business, so I want them to have some ethical grounding in what the study of business can mean. The class that I teach has a mission statement, and that is we want to illuminate the power of business to transform lives. And notice it doesn't say positively transform lives. We want to sort of understand all the dimensions in which it can transform lives. So that's a very public-facing activity in and of itself, the radio program. But as a, you know, you all maybe have encountered this by just doing a lot of interviews. You get asked to do interviews.
Yeah.
And people put together panel events in town, and you often get asked to moderate the panel. And I think that's great. It's a great function. It's a great opportunity to sort of set other people up for success and help them communicate their gifts to others. And then more broadly, in terms of the public piece, I think for me the crux is it's a great way to build community. You know, we have such declining social interaction right now. We're becoming worse humans because we don't interact in person in the ways we used to.
Hmm.
Our civic institutions are in decline. Tonight we're engaged in trying to bolster a civic institution. That's public radio. We'll probably do a little pitch here in a second.
Yeah.
But that's a big part of my motivation for the public-facing activities, is to bring people together in person and to help them make connections and find solidarity. Both in terms of problem solving, but also in terms of celebration.
I'm going to make the listeners wait for my answer and ask them to make their pledge right now.
Right
we
now?
Have about 30 left to go. We really need your support right now to get this $5,000 bonus. We're even going to extend until 8:30 tonight so that we can meet this. Please make your pledge now, 406-243-6400. Go online, mtpr.org. You can do it on your own, or you can talk to a friendly phone volunteer who's standing by.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Do you have thank yous?
We've got some thank yous.
Speaking of community, let's shout out our community
right now. We've got Janine and Blake Butcher from Missoula. Let's see. We've got Joan Garrett, also from Missoula. And let's see, Nancy Braun, she listens to all of it and likes what she calls all of the diverse programming.
Perfect. Thanks, Nancy. And I'd like to say thank you to two anonymous local donors. Again, every amount counts when you make your pledge. We're trying to get this $5,000 bonus by 8:30 tonight. We need you to make your call now. Again, our overall goal is $325,000 by tomorrow morning.
Okay, so we are... I was just about to use a tip of the iceberg metaphor, but that's like, that doesn't really make... I'm not going to use it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to use it. But we're headed towards the end of our fall fundraiser.
Yeah.
And challenges like the one that we're in now, we want to sort of impart the urgency to our listeners right now. 406-243-6400 is the phone number to call. mtpr.org is the website. We do have some celebrating to
do.
We have
some milestones. 192,000 passed. And let's keep it going. 193,000 passed. And 194. Let's just keep it going.
We're
going
to do it?
Yeah.
Can we get to 200 by the...
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's just...
Yeah. We got 8 minutes left in our time here. Let's get it to 200,000.
Let's just get up and over.
How many more donors do we need for this challenge, Sarah? Do we have a number? We don't have a number quite.
It was right at about 30.
Okay.
And that gets us, if we get 30 more donors by 8:30, we get to a $5,000 bonus.
We can absolutely
so you
do
can
that.
Be. So I was just at a tech conference in Bozeman yesterday, and I learned all about this thing called force multiplication. So you can be a force multiplier. If you are one of these last 30, you can help catalyze this additional $5,000 bonus.
Love and that it. Would get us to 200 anyways. So don't you want to be part of the person who says, I got us.
I did this.
Yes. I did this.
Yeah.
243-6400, mtpr.org. I'm going to answer the question, then I'm going to ask, I think, my final question of the night, which is, my answer is, I do a lot of speaking with students on campus. I guest lecture for environmental ethics and for the Davidson Honors College and you know, we have the first climate change studies program in the United States on our campus. How lucky are we?
Yeah.
I always learn from students. I usually have them do a creative writing exercise where they either write a love letter or they write their own land acknowledgement.
Oh, wow.
Based on real, actual relationships that they have with the land. And I just am blown away how emotional that is for students. And so I always come away feeling like my heart is expanded, my brain is blown up, and I know that I've held the space to do transformative work. So I also recently got to lecture for the Young Southeast Asian Leadership Institute.
Wow,
and
yeah.
And those, they were activists and academics from Southeast Asia, and they blew my mind.
Cool.
I didn't know about the slow loris. I didn't know about lotus blossoms grow in stinky bogs, but isn't that an interesting dialectic?
Absolutely. And again, if we're talking about the inspirational youth that are out there doing the work and really showing us how it's done, there you are.
Here's my question for both of you. What helps ground you during this time of climate distress? What are your internal and external resources?
And now there's just going to be silence on the air as we think about it. Do you have an answer right off the top of your head, Justin?
Yeah, I can go, Lauren.
Anything else?
You know, and we've had this debate. We could probably go on another hour, Sarah, in our, I don't want to call them differences, but I think we have different approaches to this concept of hope. And so I really try to immerse myself in the outdoors as often as I can. And it's a really important part of, you know, moving through wild spaces is a really important part of who I am and how I connect to the land, my friends. A lot of my most important relationships are through the substrate of outdoor activity.
Yeah.
And it keeps me positive because there's just so much beauty around us all the time. And it's changing all the time. And we're just such a small part of it. Now, yes, it is true. The humans have had a huge impact on the world and will continue to have an impact on the world. But I think that that sort of experience on the landscape on a daily basis helps me stay grounded in the sense that we got ourselves into this mess, we can get ourselves out. And that might be a naive sensation of hope, but it's a, if it is, it's something that works for me. It keeps me going.
I like that hope is a part of that vision or a part of that for you, Justin. I feel like I am probably more of a cynic than I wish I was. But I guess I do have hope in other people, and certainly as we've been talking throughout this hour, younger generations. I have like so much hope for and knowledge that they will be doing innovative and really exciting things to get us through. How I ground myself. I ground myself in learning from others, I think, really, truly, and learning about their relationship to the land that can help me create deeper relationships with the land I know. I spoke at the beginning of this hour about how I have spent most of my time in Montana, and that it's really in Montana where this climate topic, if we're calling it this, really it's cemented for me. And it is in knowing more about it that I'm drawn forward, whether that's into whatever future that we're headed into. Yeah,
I can see your like intellectual engagement pulls you in, right? Like learning and hearing from people.
Yeah, I'm going to say this and not mean it really, but you know, I don't know anything. People know so much more than I do. And so I'd much rather turn to people who, if you know, they're not quote unquote experts, they do have experience on this landscape. And I just want to know about it. I want to know everyone's experiences.
And to speak to this debate that Justin and I have about hope, I've been trying to put a finer point on it because it's a rock in my shoe.
Okay.
That I find, I'm a romantic, and so I'm really in touch with the like the high emotions and the low emotions, but really I find care and love more actionable. When I care about something, when I love something, I know exactly what to do. I know exactly how to move in the right direction. When I just hope something, I think it feels less actionable. So that's what moves me, and it's true. I mean, I have a catastrophic mind, but that doesn't mean that I don't also have immense love and gratitude.
Absolutely.
So this is what my piece of grounding this fall is. It's been unseasonably warm. So I've been putting my body in cold bodies of water every weekend. And that has been so delightful to realize, okay, I can choose to feel scared or I can just adapt. How fun is it to go cold water swimming in mid-October?
In mid-October.
Yeah.
I love that.
What a lovely conversation. Thank you both.
This was such a pleasure.
For having me.
Super fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm going to get some quote-unquote housekeeping out of the way, and then we can, talk to our listeners a little bit more. I do want to say that The Right Question is supported by Humanities Montana, the Greater Montana Foundation, and a cooperative of independent bookstores around the state. I'm really lucky to have independent bookstores working behind me. Chapter One Bookstore in Hamilton, Bookworks of Whitefish, and Whitefish, of course, Montana Book Company in Helena, and Fact and Fiction here in Missoula. We've always been supported too by listeners just like you, those of you who have been listening to this very conversation. So thank you so much. This is, again, such a pleasure. Thank you, Justin, sharing this hour with me every Thursday.
Yeah, it's fun. It's an honor. And it's great to get to know you better, Sarah, and to sort of learn more about the magic the two of you made with grounding. For listeners who haven't heard that show yet, subscribe, listen, rate, review, share, do all the things, because it's a wonderful piece of work.
And you can listen to The Right Question, A New Angle, and Grounding at mtpr.org. While you are there, we encourage you to pledge your support for these projects. We could not do it without you, and we are doing it for you. So please engage in this community that we are actively making for you. 406-243-6400 is the phone number to call. I suppose I should do a station ID too. I know people love
hearing you rattle off those impossible sounds.
I'm going to say the alphabet for you.
Especially.
Did I get it wrong last time?
No, you nailed it.
Sometimes I feel like I do. This is listener-supported Montana Public Radio, KDWG Dillon, KGPR Great Falls, KUFN Hamilton, KAPC Butte, KUHM Helena, KUKL Kalispell, KUFL Libby, KPJH Polson, KTFC Thompson Falls, KUFM Missoula, KUMW Dillon, KEUK Eureka, KUMS White Sulphur Springs, KUMD Deer Lodge, and KPHB Phillipsburg. You can always listen online at mtpr.org, or you can ask your smart speaker to play Montana Public Radio. So, Pledge Week is amazing in many, many ways, but we get to kind of play with a schedule in ways that we don't during the regular programming year round. And so Blue Green Crossing is actually coming up right now. John Floridis is going to be our host. So we're going to get to some music, and we'll talk to you in just a few minutes. 406-243-6400 is the phone number to call. mtpr.org is the website.
Thanks.
Thank you.